Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 114 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Emelson, and joining me, we have my co-host, Namali.
Hello.
And unlike last week, where we were kind of like scraping the bottom of the barrel for topics, we actually have new stuff to talk about this week. We have not only is 9.2.5 live, and we can talk about some of the issues and bugs and features of that.
Yes.
We have talent trees, not for Monk, unfortunately, but Death Knight and Druid talent trees. There is a talent calculator that you can pull up and play with. Not an official one, unfortunately, but there is one. And the talents, as they are, give some very interesting like contrasts in how they could potentially take the Dragonflight talent system. So we'll get into that more later in the show. First off, Anomaly, how's progression going?
So I actually got progression in this week. So with the fun Tuesday patch, we actually have our raid team has like a not a ton of people, but a handful of people that actually work at Blizzard. So one or two of them was stuck in some meetings late. So I actually got in on Rigolon for Tuesday. So we started the raid late. I think we started finally kicked off. We typically start at 8 Eastern, and I think finally like 8:45 or right around 9 o'clock. Got in there, started our raid. And I got about 3 hours of pulls on Rigolon. That fight, you wipe real quickly. It's interesting. It's not as hard. It's not as chaotic as I thought it would be, at least in terms of like the mechanics and then movement. The healing is definitely chaotic. Yeah. The healing is chaotic just in terms of like people get chunked. Some of our soakers are also people going down. So you have to potentially watch them.
That's
so
the hardest part. I think is what you do when soakers are like a person who's supposed to soak gets Dark Eclipse and they have to go down.
Yep.
And yeah, you have to adjust.
Yeah, we wiped to that really for the majority of the pulls, but we did get to see second down phase like probably like 4 or 5 times on Tuesday with me in. And it was nice, it was good. We went back on Thursday, went back to our typical comp. So I was back sort of riding the bench. We did not kill it, unfortunately. Our best pull is about 25-ish%.
Yeah.
But I think we're still off the DPS check, at least currently. So
yeah.
Gotta find some damage.
Are you guys 5 healing it or 6 healing it?
We are 5 healing it. 5 healing. Yes.
Okay. So we're also working on Rigolon. We kind of got stuck on Friday. So last Sunday we had some issues with healing, specifically the healing absorb, the Stellar Shroud that goes out.
Okay.
Where Stellar Shroud would go out, we didn't have enough throughput assigned to cover like clearing it off people, and then people would just kind of bleed out because they had a healing absorb and their health would not go up.
Right.
So we fixed that for Friday, ended up having a just revolving door of healer comp changes during the night. So it's really difficult to tell if the actual initial plan for the night for healing CDs would have worked, because like our main throughput healer, our Resto Druid, was out for the first 2 hours of raid.
Gotcha.
2.5 hours of raid, something like that. And so we like just had to swap things around, and then we had people DC, and we had just a comedy of time wasting in the first couple hours of raid. And we ended up actually towards the end of the night just YOLO 6 healing.
Okay. All right.
And had some really good pulls. We got to 34%.
Very cool.
And realized that if we make the healers do pretty much all of the soaking, we can probably just kill it with 6 healers. There are like 8 6 heal logs, so it's definitely, we're not the first people to do this.
Yeah.
But I think we can 6 heal and beat the DPS check, and if we can't, we'll figure that out when we hit the enrage. But it's so that's what we're doing tonight, is we're trying 6 healing.
Very cool.
But yeah, this fight is interesting because it actually is it is the same thing looped 4 times I have a spreadsheet. This is a great spreadsheet. This is my tank CD spreadsheet because the loop length is 1:52, which is very unfortunate because Brewmaster cooldowns are 2 minutes long. Damp and Harm is 2 minutes long. So it means you can't use Damp and Harm at the same time, everyone. Just like mapping out all the different CDs and figuring out, you know, how I cover everything, because I'm also doing double soaks each time. I'm soaking two galactic or gravitational collapses.
Gotcha.
But it actually was kind of neat looking at how precise the timings are, because I mapped out not only, you know, where things were in terms of absolute time, but where they were within the loop. And like,
yeah,
looking at actual like log timings, things are like within a second of each other from loop to loop. Like if something is 37 seconds in loop one, it's 37 seconds in loop two and 37 seconds in loop three and four. And that's a very actually refreshing thing compared to like Sylvanas spell queue hell.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah.
So that's pretty nice. It made it easier to plan things out, even though it was annoying to have to do cooldown Jenga with the 1:52 long loops. But I did find out that, so if you're a brewmaster, I do not recommend taking gravitational collapse with no cooldowns, but you can. And what you do is you go, you stand in it and you press purifying brew twice afterwards, and it's actually totally fine.
Interesting.
What we're actually doing is using iron bark on me. So we use bark because that just makes it quite a bit safer. The upfront damage gets cut by 20%, and that's really the dangerous part. And then I purify it twice, and it's totally fine.
Awesome.
And that's how I made the cooldowns work. Because Brewmaster only has three cooldowns. One of them is 2 minutes long. One of them is 5 or 6 minutes long. Zen Meditation is like 5 minutes long. And there's Fort Brew, which is 6 minutes long, reduced by your brew CDR. So in practice, it's more like 3 minutes long, maybe 3.5. It's like in the 2.5 to 3 minute range, depending on how much cooldown reduction you get on it. But then it's also reduced by Symbol of Hope, but the base CD is reduced by Symbol of Hope. So it's like a Symbol of Hope cast takes it from 6 minutes to 5 minutes, right? Yeah. So you're taking it from like 3.5 minutes to 2.5 minutes, and you can't really rely on it being a 2 minute cooldown or being under the 1:52 mark, even if you could Symbol of Hope every loop, which we can't. We're not playing like four priests, so.
Interesting. Yeah, I've always fights like that where they where the cooldown, like where the timings are essentially locked in and like very specific, are always a refreshing like way to play the game. Like what else was like that? There was a fight last year where literally everything happened at the exact time.
Guardian of the First Ones?
Guardian was scripted, and there was one before the dance boss.
Soul Render.
Yeah, Soul Render was very much like that too, where like everything happened. It wasn't looped phases, but like everything happened at a very specific time from the start of the fight, which makes it somewhat easier. It sucks when you have like those fights where like the first major mechanic happens at like the 4 minute mark, but there's nothing in the first minute, so you have people holding 3 minute CDs for 4 minutes.
Yes.
So always fun.
Yeah. Regulon, not like that. You have very big things happening. Very shortly into the fight.
Oh my god, yeah. It definitely popped. I will tell you, my first experience with the fight was within the first couple pulls. Number one, they had me soaking orbs, which I didn't really understand at first. Because they were like, you're in the middle one, and I thought they would just come out in a line, but like
the middle one can spawn on like this middle arc.
Yeah, so that was fun. And then as I was running to one of the middle ones, I rolled through one of the pools basically and took the pool instead of running over to the thing.
Oh no, you wiped the raid.
Yeah, and then I wiped the raid immediately. Luckily, it was the first one on like, I think it was the first or second pull of the night for me. So I was like, it wasn't as bad. I was like, okay, I realize that I need to dodge those. But
yes.
It's actually a really fun fight. I'm kind of upset I don't get to progress it, but I mean, I will more than likely be in for Jailer. And I think we're doing it just to keep the comp because like, they were at like, I think 60 pulls before I started. So
yeah,
doesn't make sense to really change it at that point. So
yeah, yeah, definitely. Cool. So yeah, fingers crossed we hit Jailer tonight. That's the goal. Kill Rygalon, hit awesome. Jailer tonight. And we will see what happens.
Oh, good luck. Good luck. Yeah. It'll be, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully we get it early next week. We'll see though. We are having a little bit, we're on a little bit of a struggle bus for sure. So,
yeah. I mean, boss is hard. Yeah. And I feel like I have to learn this lesson every tier, not to underestimate quote unquote easy bosses or bosses that we've already got, like we've got on lock.
Yeah.
Cause like Lords of Dread this tier, KT last tier, Remnant last tier, actually too, just bosses that shouldn't be very hard. If you don't give them proper respect, will absolutely trash can you.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And so it's very tempting to be like, oh yeah, we've got everything sorted, we're going to go in and we're going to crush Rygalon. But no, we got to give Mr. Rygalon the respect he deserves.
No, for sure. For sure. Well, cool. Well, I guess let's move it forward a little bit. We'll talk about some things that happened last week before we jump into the big topic, which is talent trees. So a couple things happened next week. One, we'll start with the one non, I think, Monk / Warcraft thing, which is Diablo Immortal launched last week. And it's actually a lot of fun if you don't look at the shop, we'll say. Yeah, so I've been playing a little bit. I think I'm level 40 or 45 or something like that, in that range. So got a fair amount of time in it. I played on both my phone and PC. PC version just feels like a phone game on your PC. So like it hurts to play. I'll say, it's not very good. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I think they said they're doing it just because people wanted it, but I definitely say the phone version of the game is the better version to play, or what, like mobile device, I guess you could say, phone or iPad or something like that. And the game itself is really fun. It feels like a mobile Diablo, but the microtransaction stuff is super super gross. Like, you do a dungeon in the game, and then like when you leave the dungeon, they're like, get more rewards for like only 99 cents, and it's like in the corner of the little graphic that shows you your little chest, it's like 850% more rewards if you buy it for 99 cents. And I'm like, well, that's the only price it's offered at. So like, it's not actually more. Like, I don't know what the 850% more is. And yeah, there's like a bunch of people have done some math, and like the amount of money you have to spend to like fully max out your character, if you were just going to spend money, is like in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is just, I think, a little too gross. So, I mean, it's a fun thing to do.
Like, every time those numbers come up in the context of like a game with microtransactions,
yeah,
you have to wonder how much of it is like, because people do this with like Magic Arena as well. They're like, oh, if you want to get every card, you have to spend a bajillion dollars.
Yeah.
But that math, A, assumes you're only buying cards, not actually like playing the game.
Right.
And B, assumes that your goal is actually to acquire every card, which maxing your character out of Diablo is actually way more of a reasonable goal. Like, I feel like a lot of people kind of would like to max out their character, right?
Right, yeah.
That's a little bit different than like assuming you want to collect every card on Magic Arena, which is like, nobody wants. Like, I know there are people who want to do that. Most people don't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
But both of them definitely, like, Magic Arena has huge economy issues. It's super, super expensive and in cases predatory. And from what I've seen in Diablo Immortal, it's the same way. I don't know that the $100,000 mark is actually where things are, but they're definitely going whale hunting. That is for sure.
Oh yeah, 100%. So I mean, I'll tell people, like, if you hate microtransactions, you will generally hate mobile games in general. Like, this is a very bad example or bad implementation, I'll say, of microtransactions.
Yeah.
But every game has, I feel like every game at this point that is either free to play, or like, I mean, almost any game too, has some sort of microtransaction incorporated into it. So it's just like, this is just a really bad example. But the game itself is actually fun. Like, it is a fun Diablo game to play on your phone. It's like smooth. It works really well. Like, the animations, like the spells and everything are really fun to do and play with. But yeah, if you just ignore the microtransactions, it's not a bad game. It's just, if you're the type of person that bothers you, then, you know, I would say don't play it because it is in your face.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, it's the kind of thing we talked, I think, last week about, like, me not really having space for a mobile game. Like, where am I going to play mobile Diablo? Yeah. But also, like, the microtransactions in it just would annoy me. Like, it would just, I would just find it annoying. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, and like, there's a couple other issues with it. Like, the leveling curve is all wrong because you need to use, like, it's just, there's some points where you just have to grind out levels, which is kind of annoying. I've had to do that twice already for like a level and a half before I can progress the story. So,
yeah,
it is what it is.
It but sounds it's not like bad. Diablo 3 launch.
Yeah, it's still, I mean, it's still
fun. Do you remember doing that? Like having to grind out levels, not so you could necessarily like hit an arbitrary level gate on the quests, but so that you could actually like kill the next boss that you needed in order to progress.
Yeah, I mean, I have a fun Diablo story. Maybe we'll tell it later. But yeah, no, I had a very bad Diablo 3 launch, I'll say. It was unfun. Particularly the bees in Act 2. They'll give me nightmares of dying off screen because they didn't render their bee things if they fired them from off screen.
Yeah, just randomly that was awful. Die. I remember that.
Hmm. Awesome. Well, that's Diablo Immortal. I mean, I'd say if you don't like microtransactions, skip it. But if you want to play a fun Diablo game on your phone, check it out. So cool. So next up is faction transfers and character transfers. Huge sale by Blizzard. I think everything's like 30% off. So this is sort of, they've done this in the past. Anytime they've like made a change to something. And this, of course, is that they've added cross-faction. Now it's a bit cheaper if you want to move your characters either around servers or around factions. You know, to do it. I actually might pick up a pack of these because they last for a while, right?
When they sell a bundle, they give you like tokens that you can apply to different characters, so you don't have to like pay for a specific character to faction transfer. Or at least that's how it worked for the bundles of server transfers that they started selling. Yeah. I'm assuming if they sell a bundle of faction transfers, it'll be the same way. If it's not a bundle, it'll probably need to immediately apply to a character. So, I actually don't know off the top of my head. So I've been playing like my Alliance Mage. It's been nice to actually finally be able to pug things because there's, you know, now both factions. I have yet to see a single group in either Horde or Alliance Dungeon Finder that's like not cross faction. I don't think anybody checks that box. Like,
yeah,
none, zero. Virtually every group that I've been in has been cross-faction. But then also, it turns out that a number of the assignment weak auras for the Jailer are not functional with both factions in the raid group.
Interesting.
So we had initially been telling people, you can faction transfer, we're going to allow people to faction transfer. You have to like check with us if you're faction transferring your main, you have to check with us before in order to like make sure that we don't end up with a bunch of people faction transferring and causing logistical issues as we try and manage consumables and assignments and everything for everybody. But once we heard some of the Jailer weakers don't work with a cross-faction group, we're like, okay, hang off. You can transfer your alts.
Yeah,
of course, but don't transfer mains until we're through the Jailer or we get the weak aura situation sorted, so we know the assignment stuff is going to work, because we don't want to waste time in raid with assignment stuff not working because one of you decided they wanted to play Kul Tiran.
Yeah, interesting. I didn't realize I hadn't heard the weak aura thing, but I will tell you, nobody in our raid has faction transferred. I'll say, at least their mains.
One of the people in the weekday raid in my guild transferred their main. A bunch of people have transferred their alts. So we have three or four people in my raid group that transferred their alts to Alliance. And I expect once we get on farm, it'll be a bunch more.
Yeah.
But it's... With such a question mark around like the rating assignments and stuff like that, people aren't doing it yet. So, and I should say that's just hearsay. Like, this is us hearing from other guilds that tried it that their assignment weak auras were broken and they're blaming the cross faction stuff.
Gotcha.
It could also be that they actually changed something. Like, there's been a bunch of broken stuff with this patch. We're going to get a little bit to the hotfixes later, but there's been a bunch of broken stuff with this patch. May well just be that they changed something that made those weak auras break too.
That's true. That could be the case. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. I had played Alliance up until I went Horde in HFC. So like right at the end of HFC, because I joined the guild I'm in now, for like farm for like the final like month and a half. What was it? WoD into Legion, right? So before Legion. Mm-hmm. And I was Alliance up until then. So it'd be nice to go back. For whatever reason, like, I love gnomes. So like going back and being able to play a gnome will be like the best. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see if they fix that. It'll be cool. I mean, to be fair, before I do it for real, it'll probably end up like, we'll need cross faction guilds like fully implemented. Because like, there's no way I'm like doing my own consumables for every raid. Like,
I mean, way too much work. We are basically the guild covers for us. Guild covers food and cauldrons and Vantus runes, and then people are on their own for potions because it's too much effort to track like five different kinds of potions.
Gotcha.
So
yeah. We cover everything. Like everything. We cover every potions, enchants, gems.
Yeah. We have people in guild that can craft them. And we'll craft them significantly cheaper than you can usually get them on the auction house. But yeah. We have not in the past covered those.
We cover everything, which is the only reason that it's like, I to be fair, it's funny. I don't think I've ever taken an enchant or a gem from the guild bank, but like they're in there if I wanted them. But typically like my characters are always enchanters. And then gems, I just easier just to buy them. I buy a bunch at the start.
And I think it's also like it depends on what's expensive. Cause like right now gems are like 15 gold.
Yeah.
You can get a cut gem in this 15 gold or potions were fairly expensive at various points, but we had people that were able to just like craft them in guild. So we were like, listen, you can get them for literally, you know, 10% of the auction house price. If you go and you get the materials and you mail this person, they will get you your potions and it will be so much cheaper.
Yeah. 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 No, we cover everything. So that's just, it would be rough to go alone or to go back to that. I'd back to sort of farming all that stuff, or at least buying all the mats for it. Cause no way I'm actually farming. But cool. So if you want to transfer stuff, maybe buy a bundle and that way you can keep it in your back pocket. For server and both server transfers and faction transfer both on sale. And actually the largest pack, so it used to be 6, I guess, tokens in each. Now it's 8, so you get 2 extra, plus the 30% discount. So
nice.
Yeah.
Not too bad. I mean, I can say from experience the cross faction stuff has pretty much worked flawlessly for me. Apparently cool. In broke PvP they actually disabled that. Cross faction PvP is turned off right now. Ranked PvP. Unranked PvP is still. I mean, I guess all unranked PvP is queued, and queued stuff is not cross faction. So,
yeah, that wouldn't be it. But no, I have not yet run any dungeons because I just don't care. Gotcha. Yeah, we'll see. I'll see. Maybe I'll try. Maybe later tonight we'll check out some cross faction stuff. So. Next up, a couple more things before we get into the main topic. They have added a dark elf customization, basically for all of the elf races. So that includes blood elves, night elves, and void elves. They can make themselves look like Sylvanas or Thanos or the other dark rangers. And this is available to all classes but demon hunters and death knights. I'm assuming because demon hunter and death knight have their own sort of like eyes and like,
yeah, they have their own customization options. You can actually get fairly close to this on a Death Knight, except for the eyes. You can't do the eyes, but you can get the same like pallid skin tone. You're just stuck with like blue eyes because you're a Death Knight.
Yeah. So Excuse me. So if you do, you actually get this by completing Return to Lordaeron. It's one of the new quests in this patch that sends you back to Lordaeron. You get some lore about what they're going to do with Lordaeron, how they're going to clean it up. Some interesting stuff with Kalia, Menethil, and Liliana Voss, and some of the Horde leaders, the new Horde leaders, or sorry, new Forsaken leaders specifically. And then also around this too, doing the same quest, is hunters specifically get a Dark Ranger sort of transmog. So that include the armor, and does it include a bow, I think? Maybe not. Maybe it's just
it does include a bow.
Oh, it does? Cool.
It's got this new bow. So this is what the armor and the bow looks like. If you're listening, you obviously can't see it. If you've seen the Dark Ranger in the Hunter class hall from Legion, you know what the armor looks like, because that's just what it is. The bow is very spiky. It looks like it's from Sanctum of Domination. I actually did a double take the first time I saw this and thought it was like some random bow model from last patch, because it looks like it looks like you, like, if you take this silhouette of a Death Knight in like tier gear from last tier where it's like super spiky, and you just take their shoulder line and you chop that out, that's the bow.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
It's very spiky.
Yeah. Huh. But yeah, no, it's a cool little customization they added for hunters only. I think you actually have to do it on a hunter to unlock it.
I tell the story stuff on my previous main current trash tier character hunter. So.
So yeah. But no, go check it out. Grab your sort of customization for your elves. I'm no longer an elf, so it doesn't really matter to me, but yeah. Added some new stuff there. Or new customizations there. Another cool thing coming out of 9.2.5. is a larger meta achievement. We don't talk about achievements much here, but I wanted to talk about this one. I'm not an achievement person in general. Generally, I hate them, but I applaud people who track this and go after this stuff. But they added a new sort of meta achievement called Back from the Beyond, which basically is a meta achievement of every other meta achievement. So like the idea is, if you've done like all the Maul stuff and got all the achievements in the Maul, got all Korthia achievements, gotten basically every sort of overall achievement for completing a zone or a piece of content, patch content they put out, you now have this Back from Beyond, which basically rewards the Veil Strider title, and it's for doing everything. It's a lot, particularly some of the Covenant stuff. I didn't realize how long it took, because WoW had a guide up, and there's like some Covenant thing that takes 120 days because you have to do it once a day. And like you slowly build, I forget which cover. I think it might be Night Fae, to be honest with you.
It's probably the Night Fae, their special thing. Like the Kyrian have the boss rush thing. The Night Fae have this daily seed growing garden. It's not really a garden, but gardening thing.
Yeah. So it's
there's a ton of achievements here.
Yeah, because it's basically like the meta achievement for every piece of patch content, right? For the most part. Or even some overall stuff like the doing all the all like the Covenant stuff has been an achievement for the entire time. But basically it's a nice little reward for completionists. So it's fun. We actually have a mage in our guild. It's funny to me. Mages are always achievement people. Like every mage I've ever known
in our guild.
I feel like, I don't know. For me, it's always been mages, and we have a mage in our guild that literally, like, he already has this. It's funny that they sort of added. He's really excited about it. So he also has like, I think, every mount but like three or something ridiculous. One of those people. So
ask him if he knows Clea Boltra.
Okay, I will.
Because that's the achievement hunter in our guild, who is in a very similar situation.
Those guys. I don't enjoy this game that much, but I applaud the completionist mentality for anyone who wants to chase stuff like this, for sure.
I think I actually have almost all of these. The problem is, the almost is doing a lot of work there. Because if you look at the ones that I don't have, it's the one for doing the different Shadowland, like the Covenant, like extra things, like the tea parties in Venthyr.
Yep.
I did the one for the quest and never again. So if I wanted to work on that, now I've got like, you know, months of stuff to do to get that achievement. So right. the almost is doing a lot of work, but if you like went through the achievement list, like if I went in game and pulled up my character and pulled up the requirements, I would probably have everything but like two or three. Okay. And I would be missing, I think, the Torghast one, the Shadowlands Dilettante, which is the one for doing all of the side stuff for your covenant, all the different covenants rather. And then I might have the Maw one. I don't know if I have the Maw one. That would be one I may actually not have. But like the Torghast one, I could finish in a day because I have almost all of it already.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I know the Maw one and even the Korthia one I don't have because that one requires you. Those are like the kill every rare one. I know I didn't do that. Like I know that I haven't gone through and done that. But
I actually may not have killed every Korthia rare. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, but it's a really cool achievement if you want to chase it. I think the only thing holding me back would be that I had to be Night Fae for a long period of time. At least it looks like a month or so, to actually get the achievement. So that would be the
You should do this neat thing called playing a ranged DPS because that means you're Night Fae.
God, no. Ugh, gross.
Night Fae or basically anything but Necrolord. There's like mages, frost mages play Necrolord sometimes. Yeah. Nobody else plays Necrolord that I know of that's a ranged DPS.
Yeah. Yeah, Night Fae. Ugh. Terrible covenant. Moving on from that, cool achievement stuff. You guys want to go after it. It's super fun. But next up we have a couple of quick hitters and then we'll be into the main topic. They added in some gear catch-up items to the vendor by the Flightmaster Norbos. Basically, you can purchase these. It's a 236 Season 3 item. You can purchase with either Valor or Conquest. The Valor, of course, will be a Mythic Plus piece of gear. Conquest will be a PvP piece of gear. And it's 500 Valor for one 236 piece. And it's a random piece. So it's a box that basically you'll use on a character, get a random piece. I actually did this for my pre-stall, which I would like to try and start playing. And it's really fun to like open a bunch of things. The biggest problem for me, though, is I had a neck and something else from like a Mythic Zero I did. And I literally got, of the five boxes I opened, one of them hit, I think, on neck. So I had like a redundant neck. I also got no tier slots in terms of the box I was open. Yeah.
One of the things I ran into on my mage is like, people want you to have your four set, right? They want you to have your four set now for doing stuff because Creation Catalyst is up. But in order to use the Creation Catalyst, you need pieces from Season 3 that you can upgrade. And the vendor stuff you can't upgrade. Yeah. So you're basically looking at like doing LFR and doing whatever keys you can get into to try and get the pieces that you need. And doing Sandworn Relics. Yeah. So this is another way that you can do it. You can take Valor and Conquest from your main and turn it into gear on your alt and try and land on those tier pieces, basically. I almost wish that these had just been like tier slots and weapons. That would have been really nice if this was just tier slots and weapons, because that's really what I want when I want to jumpstart an alt. Is I want to be able to go to the Creation Catalyst, drop 6,000 Cosmic Flux on it, and have four piece, and I want to be able to get a weapon.
Exactly. Yeah. It would be. Luckily, I think I did hit a weapon on my priest. But no. That was the one thing that I realized after I got done. I was like, I hit literally zero tier pieces, like, which sort of sucked. But no. This is really a cool little quick catch up mechanic. And there is a requirement, by the way, to purchase this stuff. So it's 1875 Mythic Plus rating and then 1400 PvP rating. So not terribly difficult. To hit, but no.
1875 is like having done all of the keys. Like if you just do a 15, you don't have to time it, is the thing. As long as you get points for it, pretty much, you're going to be at 1875 if you've done all 10 keys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty easy to hit on.
And then 1400 is actually the point at which you stop, you lose your like noob protection. So prior to 1400, you can't lose rating. So this is literally just, have you done the content?
Yeah. Have you tripped your way up the stairs and reached that point? Yeah. Awesome. All right. Final thing is there was some hot fixes that came in. And so I think the biggest round of hot fixes, there really wasn't much in terms of like classes, over the past week, but there was a ton of hot fixes in Mythic Plus, particularly with the way things were scaling. And I feel like this is a common thing Blizzard does, is that they don't actually ever announce this, but they realize, hey, something that should have been occurring hasn't been occurring, so we're just going to fix it and not tell anyone about it. But then, oh yeah, we fixed it, and then we actually fixed it the wrong way. So there's a bunch of mobs in various Mythic Plus dungeons, like Theater of Pain, Halls, and Tazavesh, that were not scaling with key level. So Blizzard, like anything, found this bug and fixed it, basically started to make them scale with key level, not realizing that like their base health and damage amounts, as you start scaling that even into the 15 range, essentially made these mobs almost impossible to kill. So particularly it was like the adds that spawned the last boss in Theater of Pain, even at a 15 key, I think we're one-shotting people with their death bolts. That was fun. There was the pulse from the adds on the third boss in Halls. That was essentially chunking entire groups down. And then Zofax is like the
first boss of
the
streets.
And then of course there was a fun Celia bug in Tazavesh, the last boss of Celia's Gambit, where after in phase two, basically the clip I saw was the boss just running around, not doing anything and not hitting anybody, but just erratically running everywhere. So they fixed some pathing issues, we'll say.
So these are all things like the adds in the last boss of Theater of Pain weren't scaling at all. They turned on scaling without nerfing it at all. And then, of course, madness ensues. So now they've nerfed it. And the things that they've nerfed on all of these basically makes it the same as it was on a 15. So if you go above a 15, you're going to start having them be more difficult than they were. So on a 20, you know, these are going to be harder than they were before 925. But the numbers, it's just like, this is an artifact of Mythic Plus, but the numbers on the nerfs are very, very entertaining to me. Because it's like Deathwalker health reduced by 60%. Pulse from Beyond damage reduced by 66%. Security measure damage reduced by 66%. You know?
Yeah.
Like these are large nerfs because scaling in Mythic Plus is so high.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty funny. But no, they seem to have fixed all that. It was a fun couple of days, I'll say, at the start of this week that people were a little upset with getting all the way through some keys and then dying to a boss in a 15. So
so there's other hot fixes that are not in this list.
Okay.
In particular, there are a couple of bugs from Tuesday that were causing some consternation. One of them is that buffs, so if you're not familiar, buffs and debuffs have this behavior called pandemicking, named after an old warlock spell or passive, where if you cast a dot and then you refresh the dot in the last 30% of its duration, you get a new dot that has 130%. You know, you don't lose any uptime basically by refreshing it early. That was not working for anybody but warlocks, because warlocks pandemic is implemented differently as an artifact of them having it first. Like there's a special. Yeah. So it was totally broken for everybody else, which is of course fun, because that's a major piece of like, as a druid, if you put out a rejuvenation on someone and then you refresh it early, try to use the pandemic window. That didn't work. So that led to a number of issues. There was also some fun bugs with cross-faction stuff. Specifically, like you could end up in a cross-faction instance and have pets hostile to you. That got fixed. That's not on here. You could also end up with the vendor mounts the vendors on them being hostile to you. As far as I know, that's been fixed as well.
Oh, crazy.
But yeah, lots of fun bugs.
Yeah. I forgot about the pandemic thing. Because at the time we thought it affected everybody, but yeah, it seemed like it was just Warlock. So,
So there are also two trinket changes that are noteworthy, at least for Brewmaster. One is that the cash trinket from Zymox was broken, might be fixed now. I've gotten mixed reports over the past couple of days. It's like, it's fixed, it's not fixed, it's fixed, it's not fixed. I don't know anymore. Yeah. It may be broken if you're experiencing things where it doesn't cycle through the buffs like it's supposed to. Just take it off and use a different trinket. Like, it sucks, but just take it off and use a different trinket until they do actually fix it. The second one that they changed is actually Codex of the First Technique. They dumpstered it, at least for Brewmaster. It used to reflect environmental damage. In particular, that meant damage from Stagger. So that kind of let it double dip for Brewmaster, which buffed its damage by quite a bit. That change by itself is about a 40%. Like, they made it so it doesn't do that anymore. It no longer reflects Stagger damage. That change causes it to lose about 40% of its damage. It's very sizable. And looking at like a Rigolon kill, it loses about 40% of its damage that it would have done prior to the patch. They also made a second change to it. That means it's probably never becoming good again, even if they undo that change. That change, by the way, was made so that you couldn't accidentally pull stuff in keys by targeting them while Stagger is ticking and you had the Codex dot up, because in that case, normally Codex reflects damage to whatever dealt it to you, but if you dealt it to yourself, instead it does it to your current target. So if you, and it had no range, so you could like target something a million miles away with Stagger ticking and Codex up and it would pull it. You could do some clever things in keys with it, but more often than not, it just resulted in you accidentally pulling extra packs and wiping your group. The other change that made is there is a maximum amount absorbed from each hit. They decreased that.
Oh.
That does make like higher eye level versions slightly more valuable than they were, because it used to be like a lower eye level one was basically the same because you couldn't hit the absorb cap. Now you can. And in fact, even at a higher eye level one, the absorb cap is low enough that you will feel it. So trinket was already overused. Like, it was not in general a very good trinket, but it was a trinket that you could like high roll on and do insane damage if you got lucky. And now the insane damage is, you know, 40% less in change, you know. It's not worth using anymore for Brewmaster. For Blood Decay, I think it's still good on Rigolon in particular, but for Brewmaster, it's not worth using anymore.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't pull those in, so I didn't realize there was trinket changes too. I don't think there was anything from a healer perspective. So
Codex is something that we just kind of like, we knew it got changed to not reflect Stagger on like Tuesday, Wednesday. But I've just been kind of figuring out what the implications of that are, and then also discovering recently that the absorb cap per hit also got nerfed. It was already kind of in virtually no situation should you have used Codex as a Brewmaster. Like, there was an argument for using it on Rigolon because you could high roll on it, and when you high rolled on it, you really high roll on it and you do insane damage. So like the optimal way to parse on Rigolon as a Brewmaster was to do stupid things with Invoke Nia's out, and you wear Codex and Reactive Defense Matrix, both of which are like, Reactive Defense Matrix is actually very good on average. Codex isn't, but you can high roll to an insane degree on both of them. So if you want to go for rank one, you would just like pray to high roll on both trinkets.
Get in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, cool. Well, any other topics, any other things before we get into the main topic for today?
Not that I'm aware of. We talked about the change to the Brewmaster 4-piece last week. That has actually been super nice. I'm not going to recap it. If you want to know the details, there is now a post on Wowhead about it. There's a pin in Brew Lounge about Craft Brewing about it. So go check those out. It's been very nice not losing all of my health in the downstairs phase of Bragalon.
Nice. Well, awesome. Well, then I guess we can move on to the main topic today, which is we got some Dragonflight information. Notably, we got the current full talent trees. Of course, this being pre-alpha, these are set in stone and never changing. But no, we got the talent trees for all four Druid specs and then all three Death Knight specs, which included both their spec-specific trees and the general trees. So the Death Knight general trees available and the Druid general trees available, along with not only what the trees look like, but a description of every talent in those trees was also provided, which is super interesting. It's actually a really cool way for them to sort of announce this stuff. And so while I don't know if you, I mean, I didn't really, I've really, to be fair, only looked at the Resto Druid tree and like the Druid class tree. I didn't really look at much at the DK side of things, but I wanted to basically not really talk about the trees, but talk more about what we potentially see in terms of like monk specific things. Like what would the monk tree look like? Or what are we sort of seeing from like a design philosophy from Blizzard around these talent trees and like how we think that influences or might impact our talent trees? And I guess too, like, do you think it's interesting or do you like the idea of what they are?
Yeah. I do think we need to spend a little bit of time talking about the trees first, because there's some important differences in how they're constructed that we don't really have the insider knowledge to know which one is going to be the ultimate route they go, but there's some interesting things here in how the two trees were clearly approached differently. There's some different design philosophies on them. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, there's a lengthy post going over the design philosophy of these talent trees. So first important note before we get into this, a lot of what we now have is like core abilities are becoming talents. The consequence of having 61 talent points is that you're going to, like, they're trying to do this thing where you get 61 talent points and the talents aren't small. You're not going to be getting 1% crit or whatever from your talent point. So in order to do that, they're taking what are currently core abilities and making them talents. And that on its surface can feel kind of bad in theory, but in practice, the trees are sized such that you get like 2/3 of each tree. So you're picking a significant amount of each tree.
Yeah.
And so you're going to be able to pick up pretty much everything you want. The question is really like, I mean, maybe there's a certain ability or playstyle that you don't like. Like you want to play, you know, Frost DK, but you don't want to play Breath of Syndragosa. Well, you don't talent into that, you know?
Yeah.
So they have this big post, and this will be linked in the show notes if you're listening, going over the philosophy. And so there are some basically like an FAQ style thing that I think is important to hit a couple of the elements of. Mm-hmm. So first off, they mentioned, so they've got this kind of FAQ style. So they're like, some abilities are critical to my rotation. Will that mean I always have to build a certain way? And the answer they have is no, there are basic rotational building blocks, they say, that are going to be awarded from levels 1 through 10. They're just kind of like your core abilities in theory. Druid actually exhibits this way more than the DK talents. The DK talents actually, there's zero rotational abilities that you get from level 1 through 10. It's actually kind of funny. Like literally none. You don't get any. You get Rune Strike, which is replaced. Each spec replaces it with something different. For Blood DK, it gets replaced by Heart Strike, which is a talent, by the way. For Frost DK, it gets replaced by Frost Strike, which is also a talent. And for Unholy, it gets replaced by, I don't remember what theirs is called, but a different one, which is, again, a talent. So there's like, this is how it is for Druid, but not currently how it is for DK. And from what I do understand, the DK one was actually built first, and some of the changes, like some of how the Druid one is kind of a reaction to how the DK one was built, and we'll probably, I suspect, see changes to the DK one. But then they have another one later on, another question that they address. Does this mean it's possible to make very bad builds? And their answer is yes.
Yes.
The TLDR is there are limits and guardrails, such as abilities that are automatically given. But the goal is not to prevent players from making mistakes effectively. Like the goal is to set up trees, quote, with intuitive paths that lead you to reasonable builds. But a key philosophy of this rework is to keep the player in the driver's seat of their character's growth within their class. Notably, in both of these trees, your interrupt is a talent now, which means it is now possible to talent out of your interrupt.
Yep.
In the case of DKs, it's actually, I think, never worth talenting out of the interrupt, because there's, in order to get stuff later down in the core class tree, you have to pick the interrupt.
Right.
So really, in practice, you're always going to have an interrupt as a DK. The druid one, there are some more reasonable ways to just not pick an interrupt. But at the same time, there's a lot of useful stuff after picking the interrupt that you could then like very reasonably pick up the interrupt just on your way to other things. And then one of the last things that they also cover is the question of, does this mean that some of my points are spent on obvious choices and aren't likely to be moved? And their answer is yes. The reason being that 61 points is significantly more than the 7 that we have in the current talent system. And they would consider it overwhelming if you had to think about all 61 points, you know, when you were considering your talents for every boss. So yeah. There's a bunch of core stuff that, like, if you're playing, to use DK as an example again, if you're playing Breath DK, you're not really going to be thinking about a lot of the talents that are related to playing Breath. Like the core Breath of Syndragosa playstyle, you need all the resource generation ones, and you need Breath, of course, which then means you need to take the talents on the way to Breath of Syndragosa, because that's like a capstone talent at the end of the tree. So then you're going to be looking at like maybe a third of the talents in each of the class tree and the spec tree that are in play when you're considering like, what do I run on this boss versus the next boss? And then finally they clarify. So, there are some things that are awarded outside of the talent tree. There's the abilities learned before level 10. They're supposed to be the most basic elements of your class. Like I said earlier, that's not currently the case for Death Knight. It is currently the case for Druid. And then buttons whose impact is primarily non-combat and non-power related. So this is things like Teleport Moonglade for Druids, Path of Frost for Blood DKs, and then the Druid Res Revival. Or Revive, not Revival. Different thing. And then group buffs. So they actually specifically name drop Mark of the Wild here, which is coming back. But that's not going to be a talent. You're not going to have to worry about like, there's currently a situation in Classic where if you're playing Arms Warrior and you're the only Arms Warrior, you have to put talents into a certain group buff. But if there's a second Arms Warrior, then the second one doesn't have to, because it's already covered. And that's honestly a very annoying situation to have. Right. So they're by making it baseline and not requiring you to talent into it, you don't end up in the situation where one of you has to suck it up and be the one that talents into Mark of the Wild. Battle reses are also on here. So like some core stuff is just not going to be a talent.
Yeah.
So then... I would like to like very briefly look through these talent trees, like not spend too long. We don't have infinite time left on the podcast.
Yeah.
But I do want to like scroll through it. So I've looked at the Guardian and Blood DK trees pretty extensively. You said you looked at the Restoration tree.
Yeah. The Restoration. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to pull this up. If you're listening, I will do my best to just kind of describe this situation, but, yeah. So if we pull up the Restoration tree first, what you'll notice is there's a couple of abilities that are given by default. You get Rejuvenation and Swift Mend by default. They're not, you don't have to spend points on it. You still have 31 points in the class tree and 30 points in the restoration tree that you can play with. There are gates throughout the tree that say you must spend this number of points to progress to the next section of the tree. Right. So for example, the first gate is 8 talent points. So in order to actually reach 8 talent points, you can't just take the critical path. Like if you go straight down from Swift Mend, you take your Dispel, Remove Corruption, you take Increased Healing and Magic Damage, you still need 4 more points. So the question is, where do you put those? And the answer is going to vary depending on what you're looking to do. You could go down the Boomkin part of the tree and pick up Starfire, Star Surge, and Moonkin Form, basically picking Moonkin Affinity as you can right now in the Druid Talent Tree. Or you could go down the Guardian or Feral sections, and that, if you go that way, that is going to let you pick up the Interrupt after you get through this Talent Gate. So if you were to play kind of Cat Druid, you get almost all the way to the Interrupt before you unlock the Talent Gate. And then from there, you know, you can pick up Cyclone, you pick up another Healing Increase, you can pick up Wild Charge, if I can... Oh, this one might be broken. I remember hearing that one talent in particular in this new talent calculator that got put up on Mythic Track was broken, and I think it's Wild Charge. So we're going to pretend that we've taken Wild Charge here. But again, like you reach the bottom of the restoration part, and there's a gate. You have to spend 6 more talent points, and so you have to go back through and figure out where you want to go. So if we go back into our cat part of the tree, we can pick up the Interrupt, we can pick up Rip, we can pick up Movement Speed, and now we've got this Restoration Druid build that has a melee Interrupt, which is kind of neat. And we can go through then at that point and pick up a lot more utility stuff as we reach the end of the tree. We can grab Heart of the Wild, and we still have a couple of points left over to like pick up, I don't know, Improved Stampeding Roar, or you know, another random ability, like maybe we want Primal Fury and Incapacitated Roar. And now this is our Resto Druid. This is our cat Resto Druid.
Right.
Right. And we haven't even touched the Restoration Tree yet. So the big thing here is like the Druid one, you can do this, or you could dump all, like take all the points out of the cat side and put them in the Boomkin side and pick up things like Typhoon and Hibernate and Moonkin Form and Sunfire and Star Surge, like, and really have like a fairly complete Boomkin form that is obviously going to be missing the Boomkin specific talents, but it's still going to be like playing Boomkin form as a Restoration Druid. So you can do some pretty neat kind of flexible things with that while still picking up, you know, the majority of the talents that you would like, the core abilities you would associate with a Druid. I have not looked at the Restoration Tree at all. So this is totally new to me. Life Bloom is the top talent, so that is the first thing you have to take it.
Right.
You cannot spend any further talents without picking Life Bloom. Where do we go from here, Anam?
Yeah, so I mean, I think you can go either side. So like the way that the gates work is you basically are forced to pick up a bunch of stuff. So like naturally, okay, you'll want to pick up like Nature Swiftness right below that in the middle. And then probably go to the left side and pick up Efflorescence, Improved Life Bloom, and then Improved Wild Growth. And then you still have to spend 2 more points.
Right.
So you can pick up like Improved Nature Swiftness, or go to the right hand side and do like Omen and Iron Bark, right, to give you a cooldown. And so like I don't think we have to walk through the whole tree, but at least right, like looking at the way they did it, because like what you'll notice as you go down is like Tranquility is on this as a talent you need to take, right? Nature Swiftness right, is you have to take it, or not have to, but you'd want to take it, right?
Right, and you have to go, so you have to go through, like you don't have to take Iron Bark, you don't have to take Improved Life Bloom. Right. You do have to take, you end up needing to take Efflorescence or Omen of Clarity to reach the next stage of the tree.
Right.
But you can reach Tranquility from either the left path, which goes through Improved Life Bloom, or the right path that goes through Iron Bark. So you end right, up with the ability to take Tranquility either way. I don't really know why you would skip Tranquility, given this is such a major cooldown, but you could. if there's a reason right. for it. You don't have to put points into Tranquility.
Exactly, yeah.
And so, you know, we can just real quickly click through and you can kind of see, again, like the talent gates are doing a lot of work here where you just have to diversify. You have to take a bunch of different things right. in order to unlock the next talent gate.
Right. And like, to be fair, like you, if you look at like needing to even get through the next gate, you have to take the majority of the tree below it. Right.
Yeah.
To like even get through the next gate. So like, yeah, I mean, like it's the way that I'm viewing this is like, you're going to take the majority of the talents that are on the tree. If they stay like at this number of talents. Right. And the idea of them putting major abilities inside of the talent trees, to your point, they're at positions that are very easy to pick up, right? So if we think about like the Mistweaver tree, or like, I guess we use Mistweaver since I'm most familiar with it, but like my expectation is now with Tranquility being here, that Revival will be on the Mistweaver talent tree somewhere.
Right.
Somewhere early and somewhere central, but somewhere there, right? And then also with right. like Nature Swiftness and Efflorescence and Ironbark, right? That means like Life Cocoon, potentially like Essence Font, like things like that are going to be on this tree. Where you'll have to pick it up and take it, right? Like I don't see like something, maybe, I mean, to be fair, Vivify might be the monk, might be the spell that Mistweavers start with on like the monk tree.
Right.
And that'll be something over there, which is, I'll say, is very different than the original talent trees were, right? Like
yeah.
the original talent trees had some abilities, but they were
mostly passives. Yeah.
But yeah, they're mostly passive. And like the abilities you get like augmented your playstyle. Like for Warlocks, if you went Destro, you got Conflagrate as like one of the abilities, or like Shadowburn, right? As right. one of the abilities that added it, that weren't like core abilities you just got for playing the class. So it's an interesting way for Blizzard to do talent trees, because I think they mentioned this in their design space, but it sort of design philosophy is it gets us away from just like having these like, oh, you spend 3 talent points and do 4% more healing or damage, right? Like right, you now are right. picking up major abilities that you're probably going to pick up anyway.
Yeah.
But you the interesting part to me are two areas. It's going to be the edge talents as you go down the tree. So if we use like Resto Druid as an example, like the improved Ironbark and like Nourish as sort of abilities to the sides are going to be interesting to take. And then if yeah. anything in the center you want to take, it'll be interesting how you get there. Like whether you take improved wild growth or improved regrowth, right? You get to Tranquility. Right. Those will be where like the decisions come into play. But like, so that's really interesting to me is like sort of, okay, how do we make sort of minor changes to builds, right? Right. And then the capstone abilities are really interesting, right? Like yeah. there's the choice, at least Druids have the choice between Tree of Life and Convoke. Like right. as one of their caps like, or lower down
in this hypothetical build that we put together here, like still talking Resto Druid, of course, not monk, but yeah. our hypothetical Resto Druid here is spec'd into a bunch of cat abilities. We've got a melee kick. We've got all of the, kind of the core Druid abilities for Resto Druid. We've got Cyclone. We've got Soothe. We've got Stampeding Roar. We've got Incap Roar. We've got Heart of the Wild. We've got Improved Innervate. We've got Ursul's Vortex, and then that's just looking at the class tree, right? Then we go and we look at the rest yeah. of the tree. We've got Tranquility, Nourish, Ironbark. We've got Convoke the Spirits, and Flourish, and the Dark Titan's Lesson, which is the one that lets you life bloom 2 targets. Yep. So there's just, and Circle of Life and Death. So there's like just a huge number of like very powerful things, but there's also a bunch of interesting stuff that we skipped. Like there's Adaptive Swarm, the Necrolord ability for Resto Druids, which is currently actually very good, is right. in this tree and we didn't take it. There's other stuff in here that I don't know enough about Resto Druid to know how good it is, but there's a bunch of other talents in here that we just didn't take.
Right.
And so there's still flex in here. Like there's a bunch of things that maybe it makes sense to, you know, maybe we play Tree of Life. Maybe we drop Circle of Life and Death in favor of Adaptive Swarm. You know, maybe we don't play the Dark Titan's Lesson. Maybe we play Photosynthesis instead. Yeah. There's just a bunch of like decision points in here. But one of the things I like about this is actually, I'm going to again, mentioned leveling. While you're leveling, this is going to feel good. Like, you're going to level up. You're going to get a point, and you're going to go and pick something. And, like, all of these things are, like, fairly impactful. Even the stuff that's just a percent boost to an ability is still pretty impactful.
Yeah.
Because if you look at, like, what it is, like, let's find a passive ability. Increased healing and magic damage done. So if you're taking this, you are, when you level up, dealing 2% increased magic damage. Okay, that's not huge, but for leveling up, that's not bad just by itself, giving you 2% increased whatever. And that is, this is probably the worst talent in the tree. Like, yeah, maybe the only there's one for physical and armor, and one for healing and magic damage. And those are probably the worst in the tree. Like, if you look at a bunch of these other ones, it's like, what's this one? That's stats. So there's, like, a few, I would say, kind of dud, just like where you're getting a percent damage boost. We don't have enough to do literally everything.
Right.
But you look at, like, here's a passive one, improve tranquility and wild growth, which makes tranquility and wild growth do increased healing to low health targets. That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's no number on this one, unfortunately, but that's pretty good. Like, you can imagine it being like Word of Glory for paladins, for protection paladins in particular, where it heals for up to 100% more when they're low, and getting double healing on your ability when someone's low is super, super good.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I think I like the fun part about these now is that I think that we'll, as we learn more and as sort of we get to actually play with this inside of the game and see how it works, I think there'll definitely be basically what we could say is like a base build. Like, if you are a resto druid or, you know, a balance druid or whatever type of a class, it's like a mistweaver monk, there'll be probably like of all the 31 points in the monk tree and like the 30 points in the mistweaver specific tree, 25 of those points are probably like locked in. Like, you're going to take these 25 points no matter what you're doing. And like that'll be locked in, which is fine. And you'll have 5 points to play around with, which I think is a cool way to look at it. Also, like the different pathways, like the Death Knight one, it makes sense that one maybe of an earlier iteration, particularly for the Death Knight specific tree, because it literally looks like it's three talent trees that were just mashed together. And like, there's not really the ability to branch over to the other, like, if you're an unholy, you're a Death Knight, you're only going to get unholy Death Knight abilities in your Death Knight tree, right? Versus the Druid one's set up is like, you can get your like two resto abilities and then just be a cat, like just pick up a bunch of like damage abilities for Feral, right? Or Moomkin. So
the Death Knight one is pretty interesting as a contrast. Pulling that up real quick. So there is the interrupt. The interrupt is very early in the tree. So it's actually super difficult to, like, again, like, you run into the talent gate problem. You can't go super far down any individual branch without running into this talent gate, so you're forced to diversify your talents a little bit before you can progress deeper into the tree.
Right.
There's if we look specifically at the Blood Decay specific tree, I don't want to go through all the talents again like we did for Rest of Druid. There's clearly a little bit more of an ability to shoot yourself in the foot. So you can go through this and you can pick a bunch of talents and actually like entirely skip super core stuff. Like, we can get down here and we can reach the point that we have, for example, we've taken Tombstone, and we can reach the point that we have effectively no way to generate Bone Shield charges to spend with Tombstone. So Tombstone literally doesn't do anything. And we can get farther down where we can pick more talents that you effectively can't use because you can't make Bone Shield charges. Like, we can get down here, Shattering Bone. When Bone Shield is consumed, it shatters, dealing damage to nearby enemies. This damage is tripled to enemies affected by Death and Decay. All right, that's pretty neat. We have one way right now in our current talent build to apply Bone Shield charges, and that is Death's Caress, which has been changed. That's the like ranged apply your blood plague to a target thing that has a 6-second cooldown and generates 2 Bone Shield charges. That's our only way to generate Bone Shield. Where currently, like, Marrowrend is just like a super important piece of Blood Decay. It does a number of things. It generates Bone Shield charges, but the Bone Shield charges are important for how they feed into the rest of the tree, but you don't actually have to pick it. So you end up in a situation where you like can't generate Bone Shield charges. It is a really, really bad build. Like, this has a bunch of good abilities in it, but it's a very bad build. It's way more of like shoot yourself in the foot than is possible in the Druid tree.
Right, yeah.
But I do think that this is an earlier iteration. Like, you're right, there's a lot less branching in the core Death Knight tree, which is a problem. Like, there's a right now I actually think it is correct to basically not take the Blood Decay center section as much as possible. Like, you go through and you pick up like the first 4 points in it, and then you just go pick up Frost Talents.
That's awesome.
And you pick up Unholy Talents, because they actually put a lot of the AoE threat stuff in the Unholy tree, and then they put a lot of the resource stuff in the frost like side of the tree. And so you go and you pick up your AoE threat, you go and you pick up your kind of rune economy talents, and then you don't pick up anything else in the blood part of the tree, except in rare situations. Like, you know, you can get anti-magic zone, which is in the blood tree. And even maybe you go deep enough and you pick it asphyxiate, but then you also are getting like, you're getting down into the frost tree. You're taking empower, rune weapon, and icebound fortitude is in the frost tree. That's another actually very compelling reason to go into the frost tree as a blood decay, because that's one of their major cooldowns.
Right.
But, this one is a lot more like, there's less branching. There's a greater ability to kind of shoot yourself in the foot. But again, there's just tons of core abilities in these, and the gates do still do quite a bit of work. Like, I had to work really, really hard in the blood tree to avoid taking marrow rent. It is possible. It is like, I had to take some kind of real minor talents to avoid taking marrow rent. So in practice, like, I would be shocked if somebody were to skip marrow rent, because it's like, you have to just not take a bunch of like good and useful abilities.
Right.
In order to skip Marrow Red. Like, there's just a ton. I think the Death Knight tree will see more changes than the Druid trees as they are. Because the Druid trees are, I think, actually very interesting and compelling. I don't have a lot of complaints about them. DK trees, I think, need some work. But I think the structure of them is very interesting. And if we use the Druid one as a reference, you know, it's, let me reload, because it says we have minus 2 points to spend in the Druid tree. if we use the Druid one as a reference, this is like, what stuff do we want? Like, what do we want our class tree to look like? What do you want the Mistreaver tree to look like?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they, like, to me, the interesting part will be what are the abilities they place inside of the tree, right? Like, so, like, if we think about what Mistweaver has today, and this, again, the Druid tree doesn't really contain anything new, so there's not, like, a new ability in it, really. If we take a look at Mistweaver's, right, like, it would be interesting to see if we actually get to take, like, both Yulan and Invoke Qiji. Like, right. So not make it a choice, but make it so it's two separate talents, which would be cool. You almost expect Revival to be there. I expect Essence Font to be something you pick up. I would be surprised if Renewing Mist wasn't the initial talent. So in the case of Druids, it's Life Bloom. So that should be our starting point, I think, for Mistweaver. It'll be fun to see what they bolt on outside of those active abilities, because, like, to me, like, it would be interesting to see if, like, we get back, like, the Renewing Mist, like, duplicating effect, or, like, the ability to add charges, more charges to Renewing Mist, right, as a thing, or basically, like, almost, like, get, what was it? Was it Pool of Mists?
One of the talents that we didn't talk about in the rest of the tree that we did pick up on the way, kind of rushing through it, was one that just gave more charges to abilities. So it's very reasonable that we could, like, you could pick up Renewing Mist, and then there could be another talent, you know, adjacent to it that, you know, gives another charge of Renewing Mist and makes it better in some way.
Yeah, exactly. And then it'll be funny to see how they pull in Covenant abilities to Mistweaver, because like,
yeah,
the biggest problem is like, you from a Mistweaver perspective, you have our Covenant abilities are generally like, I say outside of Fallen Order, they're not that they're not the best, but they occupy space that we don't think we generally need. So like Feylane Stomp is like the big one that people look to from Night Fae to like basically being a good talent. But the problem is it requires a ton of mana, and it already adds another low-ish GCD or low-ish cast time or cooldown, sorry, ability into basically an almost GCD lock class. Like we have something we could cast pretty much in every GCD. So right. And it costs a ton of mana for what it does, where you could just take Fallen Order, have a large cooldown every 2 minutes and be fine, right? So I hope they just don't cut and paste all of our Covenant abilities in. But
I would not like that.
Yeah, I would like to see though. I mean, I would like to see them basically give us the ability to maybe take two of our more powerful current abilities at once, right? So like being able to take Yulon and Shiji at the same time would be an interesting choice, particularly if you had to give up stuff.
I think so. If you look at the Druid tree for Guardian, there's a number of talents in the Guardian tree that are they're not new abilities, but they're not abilities they've had for a while. So there's like Rage of the Sleeper is one of the capstone talents in the Guardian tree. That was their Legion artifact ability that they have not had back since. And so getting that back on its own is very kind of compelling. But then also you're going to be able to play with like Rage of the Sleeper combined with Convoke the Spirits. And, you know, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of new abilities. You're 100% right. But there's a lot of like, what if you took this old ability and that old ability and you like, what if you played both?
Yeah. Put them together. Yeah. Which is, I think that's going to be the fun part for me as we go through this is like, what's coming back? Like, so what can you pick new? But then like how they're actually arranged in the tree. Cause this is where like this is where talent trees are actually exciting and interesting to go through, is that you begin to have to take a path through them and like use certain points at certain positions or like give up points. Like you said, like if you do the whole blood decay, I don't want to ever do anything with bone shield, which I don't know why you do that, but you could do it. It'd just be
really hard. Yeah.
It'd be awkward, but like, yeah. And it'd be interesting to see if there's like a Mistweaver build where like you essentially say, I'm not going to do anything with Essence Font because that's this left side of the tree. And I'm going to go full in on like Vivify or something else. Right. Or if they
it is possible to build a Guardian Druid that does not have Iron Fur, because Iron Fur is in your class tree.
Yeah.
By definition, like not every druid has to have Iron Fur. So you can build a druid that doesn't have Iron Fur, a Guardian druid that doesn't have Iron Fur, and like it would be, you don't, for, well, here's another interesting thing. For end game content, that's just obviously a bad idea. You just don't want to do that. The armor increase from Iron Fur is just, I mean, it's your active mitigation. It's extremely good. It's very powerful. There's a ton of things that interact with it in the Guardian tree. Why would you ever do that? Well, while you're out world questing, you know it's not very good. Iron Fur.
Yeah.
In fact, going into the resto stuff and picking resto talents is going to be more bang for your buck while you're questing than Iron Fur is. So there's an interesting thing here where, if you remember back a few episodes, I was talking about talents that I took on my rogue while I was leveling in BC that are not endgame talents. They're not good in the endgame. Right. But they are good while you're leveling, or they're at least interesting while you're leveling. And so there is something here that while you're leveling, you have room to think about, what am I going to do? What talents am I going to have that don't make sense when I'm playing endgame, but I can play now? Or what builds? Because there's not abilities that are just like strictly never useful at endgame. But there are combinations like Iron Fur less Guardian Druid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you could imagine leveling Brewmaster and not picking up Stagger. Like let's say Stagger is a talent.
Right.
You could just not pick up Stagger. That might not actually be possible. I would not be surprised to see Stagger be like a default talent or the first talent point for Brewmaster in one of their trees.
Yeah. Yeah, which Which is then yeah, that's an interesting thing. If you think about, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but with like Stagger, like if Stagger becomes maybe not a Brewmaster specific talent, but a monk talent, what does that do for like particularly Mistweavers and Windwalkers in terms of like being a very hardy class at that point if we can leverage Stagger, right?
Right. So I will say Stagger is significantly less good in PvP, which is where like Windwalker would really like it, right? Like imagine, I'm sure there's a bunch of PvP players cringing right now at the thought of Windwalker with Stagger and Purifying Brew.
Exactly.
But it's just, it's significantly less good in a PvP scenario. It's still very good in like raid. Like if Windwalkers had Stagger, you could have a Windwalker press Fortifying Brew and stand in the gravitational collapse soaks on Rigolon.
Yeah.
How interesting is that? Like, imagine then that opens up your raid comp where maybe you play a tank that has a harder time doing those soaks because they do more damage, and you bring a Windwalker and a Mistweaver and they cover two of your soaks for you. Like, you have the Windwalker do one, Mistweaver does the next, Windwalker does the third one, and they live. Yeah. Like, that's very interesting.
Yeah, and I think there's cool ways at least for Blizzard to balance that, right? In terms of like, well, we can pick up Stagger in the monk tree, but all of like the improvements to Stagger and the Brewmaster specific tree, right? So like we just get base Stagger as a Mistweaver, but for a Brewmaster, you also get that plus, you know, you can improve it through talents in your Brewmaster specific tree. So yeah, I mean I think that sort of like the talent trees themselves, the way that they're set up, with the fact that like as a specific spec, I can pull and get active abilities from a different spec, leads to some interesting combinations, right?
Yeah.
Like similarly, like you could as a Mistweaver pick up like Fists of Fury potentially, right? As an ability, and provide some additional AOE, or that, but which then brings me to like the question, and this is always a fun one, is like, does Fist of Fury just cost mana for Mistweavers, or does it cost chi? And if it costs chi, I wouldn't be surprised
if Fist of Fury in particular were a Windwalker spec tree, like if that's their first spec ability.
Yeah, it's true.
On the other hand, that's a fantastic point, and perhaps heralds the return of chi for Mistweavers and Brewmasters. I am in favor of that. Like, obviously we have the purified chi thing for Brewmaster right now, which is like this stacking ability that you get for purifying, which is really, it could be a resource, and it would be clearer as a resource if you had it like under your character bar and you like every time you purified you just got chi.
Yeah,
you know, that would be neat. So maybe like, actually there's a very interesting potential idea there, where what if purifying grants chi, and then you can spend your chi on Fists of Fury.
Exactly. Yeah, if you needed like burst AoE or for a tank, burst threat, right, on a bunch of mobs that are coming in, and like your keg smashes down, and the only thing you can do is maybe Fists of Fury, and that'll be enough to like lock them onto you, right? Or like as a Mistweaver, you take it just because you're doing Mythic Plus and you want to be able to output more damage, right, for your group, and things like that. So yeah, I mean, I that's sort of the stuff that gets me excited, is like, the druid stuff is cool, but like it'll really depend on what the initial trees come in. And I hope that the trees end up more like the druid tree in terms of like, well, actually, the more that I look at the druid tree, it's very, very similar to the it's more similar to the Death Knight tree than I initially thought, just because like I always forget druids have four specs currently.
Right.
That's why they have four starting points.
It's actually quite interesting the way they did it, because the Feral and Guardian ones kind of link up and then diverge again, which is reflective of their shared history of being the Feral tree back in, you know, classic TPC Wrath.
Right. Yeah, and the fact that like the resto tree is sort of set, situated in the middle, so they can go either more range focus with balance, and then, or maybe more cat weaving melee focus with the feral tree. So no, I mean, I think in general I'm excited about these things. I think they offer enough fun, not fun maybe, but they offer enough like intrigue in terms of like how you start to leverage your points or use your points. That like I hopefully like the monk ones aren't sort of duds, we'll say, right? Like the druid ones start off strong. The death knight ones, I don't know much about them. I mean, the Death Knight, at least the core Death Knight tree looks kind of boring, but like the individual spec trees look interesting. And so it'll be,
I've heard very positive things about the Frost DK one in particular. There's some very excited people about some of the very interesting combinations you can get there. I think the Blood DK one is a little bit more of a dud. But like the Guardian tree one, Guardian Druid one looks amazing. Some very interesting combinations there. I do think so. My number one concern as like an endgame player right now is actually specifically tanks and parses. Because if the best way to parse as a tank is to talent out of a bunch of your defensive abilities, how many pugs are you going to run into in when you're like pugging heroic? They're playing without Iron Fur or Survival Instincts. Oh, God,
I didn't think about that.
Because they want to take all the DPS abilities.
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, and I think any of the specs have that issue, right? Even like healers are going to have that issue of like, why aren't you doing enough damage? And like, why'd you take all these healing talents and not damage talents and stuff like that? So that'll be, I think that's more of like a community thing. But I think in general, Like I said, I at the end of the day, my assumption and really like my idea for how this works is like there'll be a core set of things you pick as whatever spec you are, and then you'll have you'll have wiggle room, but the wiggle room will be 5 points. It's not going to be like you'll have 30. Two separate trees you can mess around with. You'll have like maybe 5 points so that you're only locked in points, and the rest of you can do whatever you want else. I think it'll be a like in general, you will always use these 25 points no matter what you're doing, and then 5 points will shift if it's like Mythic Plus solo content or like, you know, raids and stuff like that. So
at the same time, like if you think back to Nyalotha, Nyalotha did not have very much tank damage on a lot of the fights. Playing Resto Bear there would actually have been like skipping Iron Fur entirely, playing Resto Bear, like, and then dropping a healer.
That'd be dope.
That would be cool as hell. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that would have worked on a number of fights. It wouldn't have worked on the Zoth, I don't think, because the Crushing Tentacles did too much damage. You needed defensives on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, a bunch of the earlier fights, you could have gotten away with no Iron Fur. This spec, like, you just, like, generate Earth Warden stacks and then use the fact that you have a bajillion health and rotate CDs, and you... Then while you're not tanking, a lot of them were also like you could basically solo tank. So you could have your other tank do most of the tanking and you taunt for the things you have to taunt with a cooldown. And then while you're not doing that, you're healing. You're throwing out wild growths and swift mends and just being kind of a budget resto druid. And then, you know, you get to underheal. That's cool. And that's something like... I can imagine the same thing happening for Mistweaver, like maybe even the opposite way for Mistweaver, where instead of it's being like a brewmaster that you pick the Mistweaver talents, it's a Mistweaver that you maybe pick up, like if Stagger and Purifying Brew are in the main tree, maybe you pick up Stagger and Purifying Brew. They've already got access to Dampen Harm, right? And and Fort Brew. So if you don't need to tank very often, then you can just taunt the boss, stagger, purifying brew, dampen harm, be perfectly fine for short periods, and then the main tank takes it back and you go back to healing.
If you're just needed for like to do a single taunt for one ability, and you can live that one ability for however often it occurs, right? It definitely opens up some interesting things. I mean that's sort of also a play into how the fights are designed and stuff like that, but, But no, I think it'll be fun to play around with these once the monk ones are in. My sort of cynical nature of this is that I'm almost positive monk will be the final class that gets released. So like we will be well into alpha by the time, or even into beta by the time we get the monk tree. That'll be sort of the one downside of all of this. I understand why they did what they did in MOP in terms of like design philosophy and like sort of streamlining everything. But to be fair, bringing this stuff back, I mean, even if it's something you mess around with at the start of every patch and that's it, it's still sort of super cool to sort of think about it. Think about, you know, hey, can I remove like 5 points like from this side of the tree to the other side of the tree so I can get this cool ability and pair it up with something else? And like, yeah, that sort of conversation will be fun.
There's a lot of like looking at the Druid one again, there's a lot of, and actually the DK one has this as well. There's a lot of situations where it's like, well, we need this utility for my group. And right now that would be brought by a Guardian Druid, or right now that would be brought by a Boomkin. Yep. Well, I can talent into that. I have to give up something else for it, but I can talent into that. So maybe instead of us having to go and recruit a Boomkin, you know, maybe we have me shift my talents around a little bit and now I do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And both the class trees have some of that going on. I think it's more pronounced in the Druid tree, and some of that's due to the just the history of the Druid tree being like very focused on playing or doing multiple roles, right? But yeah, that's there's a lot of very exciting stuff here, and there's a lot of room for things like I can 100% wait for people coming and asking us in 10.0, why is Andy Brew running these talents? Why, like, these aren't the ones in the guide, and it's like, it's because he has, like, maybe he skips the kick, right? Like, yeah. Andy Brew's not running a kick. Why do I need to run a kick? Well, it's because Andy Brew is running with 3 DPS, so they're very good at the game and are going to kick for him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that'll be fun to see, like, what the top, like, particularly what some of the top players in both PvP and, like, PvE, like, Mythic Plus and Raids run, and then sort of those questions. It'll be good to get back to that in terms of, like, because right now it's just like, well, why are they wearing this trinket? Or, you know, so it's few and far between. But yeah, it'll be fun to say, like, why are they specced into this? And it's like, have you asked them? I have no idea. Like, there's probably a very specific reason why they did it. I don't know that, though.
Yeah, I mean, we've already run into that with the Brewmaster stuff, with specifically Bob and Weave versus Damp and Harm, where, like, a lot of the top Brewmasters play Bob and Weave because it scales with incoming damage taken. Damp and Harm is, like, less useful in keys when you're not having kicks get missed. But then, like, when you're pugging your weeklies or whatever, or you're doing pug keys, even in the 20s, people miss kicks. You need that Damp and Harm to keep you alive through some of the pulls with casters that are very dangerous. But if you're, you know, Andy Brew, Trelski, Equinox, whatever, that's doing the very high keys with a fixed group that's good at the game and are going to get the kicks reliably, you don't need that.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Exactly. Oh man, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to get back into all this fun stuff for sure. So,
but yeah, I think that is going to bring us to the end of the show for today. I am very excited about the possibility. Yeah. I would like to, in a week or 2 weeks, have them just dump 2 more talent trees on us. Like, imagine next week if we get like Rogue and Mage talent trees or something.
That'll be awesome. I mean, even if it's every other week.
Like Paladin and something else, like, that would be great. And that would give, like, that would be a way to tide us over until we actually get Alpha.
Yeah, exactly. Until we get to play the new stuff. So now, and then maybe hopefully at that point we're through Jailer and we're just focused on the new stuff.
Yep.
None of this old content.
Yeah. Anyway, that is it for the show today. Thank you all for watching and or listening. If you enjoyed it and you want to support the show and all the work that we do over on the PCUS Reality, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/PCUSReality. And of course, we would invite you to come and join the Discord, patron or not. There's a lot of good information there. If you want to know the details and the math behind the change for the Brewmaster 4 piece, you can find it there. If you want to just hang out and talk about F1, as is probably currently again happening.
No race this weekend.
No race today. Okay. I'm sure they're probably going to ping me talking about F1 now that I've mentioned it.
Of course.
But if you just want to hang out, it's a great place. But that is it for the show today. So thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.